Welcome to Adulting on the Spectrum. I am Andrew Comerow, an autistic certified financial planner. I co-run Adulting on the Spectrum with Eileen Lam. Hey, Eileen.
Hey, Andrew. Hey, everyone. I'm Eileen Lam, and in this podcast, we want to highlight real voices of autistic adults, not just inspirational stories, but real people talking about their boring life. Basically, we want to give a voice to people like us.
And today, our guest is Tony. Tony is a bilingual autistic author, writer, motivational speaker, podcaster, and international advocate for autism, mental health, and other causes. He was born and raised in Puerto Rico, currently lives in Florida. Tony works with Autism Speaks as part of the Autism Response Team, which is an information line for the autism community. As part of his resume, Tony has 10 years of working in customer service, sales, management, and also done work on television, where he had a segment about autism on Univision.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. You know, this is like a dream for me to be with you guys. So thank you so much. And I thank you for what you guys do for the community.
Thank you.
So Tony, I'm going to actually change the script slightly. How much are you getting paid to be here today promoting Autism Speaks agenda?
I got a feeling I was going to get a question about that, but no, not being paid.
Zero,
is it
right?
Just me? Zero, Tony Hernandez Pumarejo, who has been an advocate for 10 years, done work for the, I have worked and lived autism since age 3, so.
So.
Just for the record.
Yeah. Just for the record. Yeah. You're being paid just as much as we are. Zero. Yeah. Just trying to help the community. So Eileen, exactly. I stole your first question that you usually ask away. So I'll give that back to you now.
Thank you. So Tony, we always ask our guests how they like to identify, and we're talking about, you know, autistic, person with autism, and also your preferred pronouns.
Well, in terms of the preference, in terms of first person, the third person, sometimes you may see me change terms as a person on the spectrum or an autistic person. Sometimes I may go to Asperger. Reason for this is because that was my original diagnosis. But to be honest, and I know there's a debate in terms of that, I have no preference in regards to what I'm being called. And in terms of pronouns, I never understood the pronoun thing, to be honest, with all due respect. But I guess I'll go with him and he.
Can you tell us more about yourself, your story? We like to say boring lives, and maybe yours isn't so boring. We hope it's interesting. Well, and just, you mentioned Asperger's is the term when you were diagnosed, so you must have been diagnosed at least several years ago, and tell us what that was like. Tell us your story.
Well, thank you, Andrew and Eileen again. My name is Antonio Hernandez Pumarejo. That's my full name, but I go by Tony. Was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I was diagnosed with autism at age 3. This is in 93. I was born in 1990. Back in the early 90s, there was not a lot of information about autism as it is today. And because of this, my parents were told different things in terms of what I had. They even, you know, that I had this or that I have this or disorder or anything. They even told my mom that I was a retard. And this was not just anybody. It was a official from the Department of Education in Puerto Rico. And the term retard was used more often at that time to describe different differences and conditions back then. And today, I was able to receive the diagnosis at age 3 as autism, simply autism, because this was a year before the DSM-4. I don't know if you guys remember, the DSM-4 was released in 1994. That's where they came the terms, you know, autism, you know, Asperger, and there was like two other types. I forget the names right now. But as a person, even on the spectrum, I was completely nonverbal until age 4. Struggles with severe and social, anxiety disorder, which I still deal with it to this very day. Struggles with communication, struggles with making friends and understanding what other people did. Repetitive behaviors, problems with eye contact, and so many things. But the biggest challenge was connecting with others. And this led to different types of situations as I was growing up in school, like facing social rejection, bullying, and many other tough situations. And one of the examples is, in my culture, we laugh a lot. We tell jokes and gossip and all that stuff. And for example, with the different types of jokes, I didn't laugh or didn't follow through. And the other kids thought, they thought about they took that as a sign of disrespect, that I was disrespecting them. And that was not the case. I was having difficulties understanding what they did. And that led to a lot of different situations. I'm the third of four children. My mom, my parents were divorced at age, when I was age five. So I went through a lot of tough situations. Sometimes you see some autism family all perfect and the child on the spectrum receiving all the love and care and unity.
Like if you follow Eileen's Instagram, that's exactly what you will see all the time. Mm-hmm. Sarcasm there by the way. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have issues with sarcasm too. So with all due respect, sometimes, when they, I don't follow through. It's that I'm not being disrespectful. It's I have difficulties in that with all due respect. But I'm not saying that my parents didn't support me. They did support me, but there was a lot of challenges. We lived with my mom for the first years. Then my mom had to leave Puerto Rico because she was diagnosed with MS, or what if MS is multiple sclerosis, which is the same disease that unfortunately my aunt, her sister, passed away at age 46, almost in 2008. Then we moved to my dad. Another thing is that this was a lot of changes going on. We had to deal and struggle with all of these changes, changing school also. So it was, in other words, to make it simple, I was receiving a lot of hits from life. It's like being rocks being thrown at me. And the interesting part of this journey is that I didn't know about autism until age 14. Age 14 was the first time I heard about autism. I was diagnosed at 3, but I didn't find out until age 14.
You mentioned the bullying too. And that's something that's really close to my heart because my youngest is dealing with it. I dealt with it when I was a child too. Do you feel like talking about this? Do you think there's anything we can do to educate people about bullying in the autism community?
And going to my bullying situation, I went through what is called cyberbullying, but this was in high school, 2006, 2007. I have a situation in which I was receiving the bullying attacks. I was being attacked as a homosexual. I was being attacked as a monster that wanted to kill people. And I'm sorry that I'm talking like this, but I'm talking about the way that the things that I was going through back then. Also, 2007, they stole my identity. They created fake profiles, a thing called MySpace back then, which was the most popular platforms. I don't know if that still exists, but they stole my identity and they created 3 profiles and they said horrible things. And that led me to clinical depression and suicidal thoughts. That's where it began, which continued on for a couple of years. So in going to the bullying and what should we do, it's not an easy, it's not a clear answer. We can talk about raising more awareness about the different situations of bullying, but until we solve the core issues in our society, we're not gonna be able to get to where we want to build an inclusive world, a more accepting and respected world to respect the differences. So we had to work together first in our community because they're bullying in our community, and I have to say it, but also in our society as well. We had to work together to create a more inclusive environment. And it starts with us to be able to improve and be able to work together. I don't know if that answers your question or.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So you advocate for adults on the severe end of the spectrum. What do you think we can do to ensure that, everyone gets the support they deserve? I think I heard a radio advertisement, Autism Speaks. I was listening to Bloomberg last month, and it was, I think I'm paraphrasing, but we just want everyone with autism to live like their best lives. I don't think I have it exactly correct, but it was potential. So what does that, again, mean to you? And what can we do to, ensure that mission is achieved?
That's a very excellent question. I know that there's, as part of our debates in our community, and we have to talk about this, is some people, I don't know how to say it, sorry. There's not enough talk about severe autism. Now, that doesn't mean that I only advocate for people that have more severe autism. I advocate for everybody, whether it's level 1, 2, and 3. The whole thing is that we need to talk more about that. And let's not get ourselves wrong. I mean, people with a high functioning autism have their own challenges and they also need support as well, but it's different. It is very important to be able to, everything that is important here is education. To be able to learn about how autism impacts each individual, because it's different beyond the level 1, 2, and 3. And unfortunately, there's not been a lot of talk about severe autism, whether it's media or in our social media, because they have a picture of autism being the high functioning. And that's only one autism. For example, you have different groups that are call themselves this, and that, and they say, oh, that they are, they represent autism, which is not the case. They're only a part of the autism world, as I call it. But in other words, you know, and I don't want to sidetrack from your question. Our community's mission, despite the debates, despite the divisions, is one thing: quality of life, supports, help each individual on the spectrum, knowing their strengths and their challenges, and work with them to be able to achieve a better quality of life. I've always believed as an advocate that whether you're nonverbal or you're verbal or you need more support 24/7, each individual can achieve a better life. That's, I always see it. That's why I've been fighting as an advocate for the entire community for almost 10 years, is for education first, you know, be able to get more together as a community, which is the key, to get more together as a community first, and then work with society together to achieve that goal, whether you're a child on the spectrum or an adult.
I loved your answer. It's something that's really close to my heart too, to make sure that everyone on the spectrum is represented on social media and in the media, just because you look at those TV shows and movies and, you know, they feel like very inclusive because, well, there's an autistic person, but it's always the same type of autistic person, like almost like genius, like kind of quirky with, you know, and
just like me, right, Eileen?
Or like me that I've been on television.
Yeah, tell us about that. What was it like as an autistic person working in television?
The way in which I got to television, going back to a little bit to my story, if you guys don't mind, because I left it in high school. So I graduated from high school. I went to college. I had struggles in college. The good thing is I don't have to deal with the bullying in college, which was good. But I was struggling in making friends. I felt like an alien, you know, when I was in college or different places. I was like, what's wrong with me? And that I said, I'm being honest. People can say, why are you saying there's something wrong with me? I said, I'm saying that that's what I felt at that time. Because sometimes people may take that as, you're not proud of that, which, I don't, you know, that's part of the things we're talking about. But I went to college. I moved from Puerto Rico to Florida. I got my first job. And this is, I got a job in an area which, according to society, we're not supposed to be doing, which is customer service. The reason why is because customer service is 100% social communication, and it's a very fast-paced environment. And people told me that I was not going to make it there. And I thought that I was not going to make it there. Go ahead, sorry.
So this is actually one of the questions that we were going to ask, and I think you were going about to get there. So I'm also in a, you know, a customer service sales-based role. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's one of those where, you know, it's not commonly thought of, or you're not able to make it. So what made you, so kind of a two-part, a bit more specific, what made you, you know, want to do that in the first place? Was it, you know, the only job available? Was there, you know, a reason? Why did you excel at it? Assuming that you did, which we're going to assume. And, you know, what, you know, also what struggles did you have, and any, you know, advice you can give on how you overcame that, specifically in what's considered a sales and customer service role? Because this is just such a huge misconception that I think is really important.
What happened was, moved to Florida. I was trying to get a job according that will be a fit for me as a person on the spectrum. Reason for it is because, I don't know if you guys remember, there was an article by Dr. Temple Grandin, in which she put the list of jobs, right, recommended for people on the spectrum. These people on the spectrum can do this job, but there's a list of jobs in which are not recommended for people on the spectrum. And cashier was one of them. And the thing is, I was looking for more of a position that it will require less social communication, that will require less dealing with people. That was back then. The thing is that I was having difficulties finding that job. I was not able to find it. It took me months. And the thing is, at that time, I was living with my mom and we got to financial difficulties. So as a result of that, I had to put in my mind, okay, let me find whatever came by, because we were in a recession back then. This is 2012. And I applied for the position of cashier, recommended by vocational rehabilitation. I worked with VR a little bit, not successful, but they referred me to apply to this place, the big retail box store. You know, when you guys, you know what you guys are, what I'm talking about, the big stores like Walmart's. And the first challenge that I had is in anxiety, and dealing with severe anxiety going to the interviews. But my mindset, the way I was able to surpass and to survive the interviews, was that I focus on one thing: what can I contribute? Hey, this is what I contribute to your business. This is what I have done. This is what I can do for you, despite my challenges. And I went through struggles, but I was able to get the job. Then I got into the environment. And you guys, being this job as a cashier felt like being in school again, because I was dealing with different types of people, different types of personalities. They were nice people. And there were other people that were special. And what I mean by special is they were not very nice. And it was so fast-paced, because if you work in retail, I don't know if you guys know anybody that's working retail, is you have to be fast-paced. You had to be here. You had to multitask as a cashier. And I was struggling badly. I thought I was not going to survive. And that went to a severe depression, because it got to a point in which I was blaming everybody. I was blaming my
past. So what made you survive? So you started the job out of necessity. You stepped outside your comfort zone. And then, well, you spent 10 years doing it. So I imagine it got better. How did it get better?
Well, it came to one important moment in 2012, 2013, in fact. I was so depressed, so frustrated with myself that, you know, I felt like I was a failure in life. And I almost ended my life in that year. But it got to a point in which I had to put everything in perspective. And I had to say, hey, I can no longer blame the past. The past is done. There's no time machine. There's no way to go back. There's no way to go back and fix. But what I can do is to work on myself and not let autism determine what I can and cannot do, and moving on to accomplish my goals. And this was the moment, and this was a key moment, and also as an advocate, as I'm going to mention in just a little bit. And then I continued to improve. I began to improve my social skills to the best of my ability.
To challenge you for a little bit, that is very important. As somebody who's struggled with very similar things, I can relate. But if somebody's listening and they're also very depressed because they're working a cashier job, you know, it's inspirational. But what practical tips can you give us? So like, you know, it can be very, it's almost impossible, right? To like, you know, somebody's depressed and be like, no, I just found it within myself and now I'm able to do it. But for somebody who's in that situation right now and is hard getting day to day, what like one or two just very practical, simple tips can you give somebody who's in a retail job where they're struggling and they're overwhelmed? What did you do to make your work experience better?
Well, a couple of tips. One, focus on building your social skills. Get out of the comfort zone. The more you talk to people, the better. Don't limit yourself in that area. Also,
but also
another tip is to be able to learn, learn the different skills. You know, a lot of times we let the challenge or the limitation determine what we can do. You have to be open-minded. And that's what I tell everybody when I'm advocating. We a lot of times we let limitations determine what we cannot do. Learn, as I said, training. Take every opportunity to grow. Have a proactive relationship with your supervisor. I know it's not everybody has the best supervisor in the world. I understand that. But you may hate your job. You may feel depressed, but you have to find a way. And again, it's different for each individual. And, you know, to find a way, to find one thing that you want to learn from this job, work on it, because it will help you to be able to grow, not only to get a better job later, but also in your career. So as I said, there's a couple of things that, you know, that I tell, and again, each person is different, especially on the spectrum. But that's one thing, for me, one thing is different than for all of you or each person on the spectrum. It's one thing that you had to work on to be able to survive in those types of jobs. And again, each person in the spectrum is different. Each person's not everybody's going to do retail jobs. Not everybody's going to do sales and all that. And I understand that. But that doesn't mean that the person on the spectrum, others in the spectrum, are incapable of doing anything. They're capable of doing something. We have, again, work with the individual, learn from them and work with them to achieve their true potential. Hopefully that answers the question. Or
I think it does, Andrew. Does it?
Yeah. No, and I think that's a good tip, is no matter where you are, take away, one important thing, one useful thing for the next stage, in your journey.
Yeah, and speaking of the next step in your journey, you now work at Autism Speaks. Can you tell us about your job there? I know you're part of what's called the Autism Response Team. I don't think people are familiar with it, and it's one thing I love about Autism Speaks. So if you could tell us more about it, that would be great.
Definitely. I haven't missed the TV part yet, which I wanted to talk about before we end the interview. So yes, I work with the Autism Response Team with Autism Speaks. My journey to Autism Speaks is a story in itself. And the reason for it is because I've been applying for years. My relationship with Autism Speaks was not very, in sync, let's put it that way. Because I was part of that group that was not a fan of it. But what convinced me to join Autism Speaks is, hey, let's focus on my mission again, what became my mission. If I can do something, working with a greater, with Autism Speaks that makes a difference for our community, and I was able to do that, then I'll be proud. And hey, let's work with this. Let's work together as a community to get all together. So I applied for Autism Speaks for the first time in 2017 for the ART position, for the Autism Response position. Then I reapply again in 2018. I did the interviews and all of that. But there was a situation in which the position had closed and it was moved to a different location. But I never lost communication with Autism Speaks. We kept ourselves in communication. Then last year I applied for the position again. And this time, and I remember because, Lindsay Nader, she remembered me from the interviews that I did 3 years prior. So what I did was to create, I was able to do the interviews. I did the interviews with Andrew, everybody, and they offered me the position. And I felt so relieved because I was leaving retail after 10 years and my back was killing me because working in retail as a manager is not easy. And so working with the Autism Response Team throughout this year, I have learned more, a little bit. If you don't know what the Autism Response Team is or what they do, I'll explain it right now. The Autism Response Team is an information line that works for the community. We receive calls, emails, messages from everybody that is impacted by autism, whether it's parents, autistic self-advocates, professionals, therapists, looking for information or resources and supports from across the country. And not only the country, but also other parts of the world, especially in Latin America. And I learned in this position, the trends. And what I mean by trends is, what is what the people are looking for, what our parents are looking for, what autistic individuals are looking for, the professionals are looking for. I learned about different situations in this job. I learned more about our community in this position because right now, autism became officially my full-time job. I was no longer a retail. Now autism becomes my full-time job. And I have learned so many things that I wish in our community, some issues in which I wish in our community is being talked, we need to talk about more often than some of these things that, for me, with all due respect, takes us away, especially the divisions, takes us away from what our mission should be, quality of life. It's not complicated. And for example, and I want to mention a couple of things, it's a couple of situations that goes to my point. I receive situations of families homeless. I have received, cases of autistic adults homeless in jail. So many situations that unfortunately are not talked about a lot in our community. So I'm very proud to be able, it's not easy, especially this 1 month. For me, honestly, April, this was the most, exhausting April I've ever had because I was working in art and also working in my other projects as well. But you do a job to make a difference. You can be that lifesaver for that family, for that autistic individual. And I'm very proud and honored to be part of the response team and not only working with the response team, but doing other things for our great organization. So I'm very proud and privileged and honored and blessed to be with Autism Speaks.
So does the Autism Response Team just help people find gay conversion therapy and access to eugenics? Sorry, that's a bit of sarcasm. Or like, can you give us, you know, and I think it's true. You know, there's a lot of people where there is no other resource, right? Not everyone has the ability, especially, you know, again, minority or homelessness. Or can you tell us about, assuming you can disclose it, you know, just, you know, a moment where you really made a difference for like this one person, this story, or just an example of somebody who called in, who you were able to help. Do you have any examples?
I have a couple, obviously without disclosing the identity and the exact situation. I have this family that was, you know, not this family, sorry, an autistic individual that was reaching out to us multiple times.
Hold on. So first, I think many would be surprised that autistic individuals contact the Autism Response Team, and that not every autistic individual hates Autism Speaks, and that you actually are an autistic individual providing free help and support to other autistic individuals. I mean, that sounds pretty amazing. So I just want to say, is that, before I let you answer the question that I just asked, is that a higher portion than most people would believe, that it's not just families, that there are lots of adults out there? If you're homeless, you don't care about identity language on the internet. If you're an autistic homeless person, that's, you're not your number one concern. Is that a higher percentage than some might be led to believe?
Yes, it's a higher percentage. And a lot of times they don't disclose also that they have an autism diagnosis. But you may feel like, I have the signs. As I say, and I don't want to overcomplicate things, because one of the things that I have is being too analytical. It's a different variety of topics that they call about. And I have this autistic adult that was feeling depressed because nobody understands it. And this autistic adult said, and I'm not making it up or anything, said, I wish I can find a cure to cure what I'm going through. Now, I talked to him and say, I understand it's difficult, but I shared with him all the information and supports that can help him as well.
You didn't give him access to the super secret cure that Autism Speaks is working on in their black site back, office, hidden underground.
No, I just provided that support and that resource and tell them that, hey, we're here to support. And I credit the customer service experience that I had for 10 years, because it learned me to deal with tough situations, especially as a manager. During COVID, I never stopped working during COVID, and I had to deal with a lot of tough situations. So I think the experiences of life have helped me through imperfections. Of course, I'm not saying perfect, I'm not. But to learn to work with those, whether it's autistic individuals, families, work with the different perspectives, the differences of opinion and the different situations towards one goal, quality of life. I always say that, quality of life, because that's what our mission as a community should be, in my opinion.
I just wrote an article about Autism Speaks from my own perspective. I work there.
Eileen, if we're recording, I don't think we've ever announced that you work for Autism Speaks yet on our podcast,
right?
That you've got a job. I mean, I don't think we have. So... Everyone, Eileen got a job working for Autism Speaks about a year into our podcast.
You know, it's not secret anymore anyway, because I wrote a blog post about autism.
Not a lot of people knew that I was with Autism Speaks until recently. They posted the Upworthy. Article.
We're going to ask you about the Upworthy, so just hold on a minute. Okay, let Eileen finish. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, I posted an article about Autism Speaks just before we hopped on for this podcast. And one of my points was that I love Autism Speak because of that amazing hotline, the response team. And I posted about it and people are like, didn't know about it already. And I think that's something that would benefit so many families. Like, often people come to me after a diagnosis, hey, I don't know what to do, who to talk to. And now I'm so glad that I know to tell them, hey, just contact the art team, Autism Speaks. Anyway, let's talk about that Upworthy article. So you did a collaboration with Upworthy and they posted it on social media and the comments were not very kind. Let's just say this. Does it affect you to read those comments, or what is it like for you?
It affected me. I'm not gonna lie, but I shouldn't. I was not surprised because I can understand. There's so many, I can understand. I'm trying to understand the different points of view from these groups, that they take autism as an identity, and some people. And I'm trying to understand the different points of view. Some people don't understand. Some people don't know that I've worked for the community almost 10 years before Autism Speaks. So this is not my first time, doing autism work. I've been doing it for almost 10 years. I have also written a book before Autism Speaks. I have different things before Autism Speaks. I think that's one of the, unfortunately, it's very sad, really, that we still have these issues, to be honest, because, it can be compared to what a vision that they had in the past. And that divide is no different than the divide that we're seeing. And I may sound controversial right now, but that's the way I see it. You're no better than the vision that you fight against, the previous vision of our organization before. So we had to let go, as I said, autism, people that say they speak for all of us, that's not true. You can only speak for yourself. I had to learn carefully also in terms of language, because I had to be said, okay, what I do is I raise awareness of our cause, our autism, the good and the bad, these inspirational stories, but the difficult stories, because it's an autism world, differences of opinion. But I have always believed, and that's the reason I don't lose hope. I've always believed that we have more in common than we have more things in common than things that divide us. And if we work together, the different groups within our autism community, we can achieve better things. And I believe that we will be in a better place than the place that we are right now in terms of autism. So that's the key, is that, hey, people are not gonna agree with my decision that we're for Autism Speaks, and I can respect their opinion. But the one thing that we need to stop is this calling, this bullying, this hate speech that I see from different people. I'm not gonna name the people, but we need to work together as what the mission should be against quality of life, simple as that.
How do you feel about the current autistic representation on television? And I know that seems like a loaded question, but to break it down with a bit more specificity for you, what is your favorite representation of autism in television? You can include movies or, video entertainment industry. And also, if you could share, what is your, least favorite and why?
It's so difficult because obviously I can include myself because I've been on television, but I think that one of the most best episodes that I've watched on television was Dating on the Spectrum, the Australian dating program that had a different autism of people on the spectrum. I think that's the name, correct? Dating on the Spectrum?
I think you are correct. What did you like most about that episode?
It showed the different things that are realistic in terms of the challenges that people on the people on the spectrum have in regards to dating, in regards to relationship. And for me, watching those episodes was difficult for me to watch because I've always had, and I still have, a challenge with relationships. It may not sound it may sound weird for others, but I've never been in a full relationship. So this has been an area that people may say, oh, you're a success story. You've done this, do that. And I can understand, but I have things that I'm struggling with, and I've struggled with since then. And I'm not saying that for sympathy or everything. I'm just saying what I'm going through and why my connection to that TV program. So, because I felt connected to that TV program. I don't know if that makes sense.
And for me, that was, aren't they doing a US version of the TV program now? Have you auditioned yet?
I didn't know about it. Well, I heard about it, but I've been so busy with so many things, I'm probably gonna miss it. So I'm gonna find it once I have a chance to finish the podcast. But yeah, that's my favorite representation. And my least, to be honest, and with all due respect, is the ones in which sometimes they show the superpowers, as I said, I'm not saying they're bad shows, but they say The Good Doctor, for example. Again, as I say, they just represent one autistic story. We had to realize that autism is a spectrum, but again, we had to make sure, and I'd like to see more. I know we have a friend that is working on this as a consultant, Dr. Carrie Magro, who's a mentor of mine. He's more into this than I am, but we need to continue to create more inclusion for all the entire spectrum. And I think that hopefully we can continue to work on that, you know, as the years move on.
Okay, we have a, do you know the statistic for the art by any chance? Any statistic you can tell us about?
The statistics for what specific again?
For the autism response team, there's we've decided we think it would be a good thing to promote. So like, I know there's some statistics on like how many calls are field. I think there's a nice graphic too that I've seen before. Do you have those off the top of your head? Because if you do, then Eileen, we'll just ask you that question, right, Eileen? Because we probably want to share that and piss off actually autistic a bit.
Well, I don't have it in my numbers exactly. I know that there has been an increase in terms of the percentage of autistic, you know, people that, you know, autistic people calling the art team. There have been a percentage. Right now it's in double digits, like 11%, I believe it was. Obviously, they call, or one of the statistics is that a lot of people call for supports, for resources. One of the areas that they call also very often is for employment, which is a big challenge in our community, employment, business, entrepreneurship. Also calls for transition as well. Also in terms of the diagnosis as well. We have received an increased call of adults calling to get an information for a diagnosis. There's been an increase on that. Because I have this person say, oh, my child is on the spectrum, was recently diagnosed, but I'm feeling with all the symptoms that may also be on the spectrum. And there has been an increase on those calls as well. Obviously, the language, as there's been an evolution in terms of the language as the years go by, in terms of more acceptance, more, not in the negative tone about autism, but to be more neutral focus language to make sure that we're including everybody. And I think, I don't know if, the, you know, but that's are some of the trends and statistics that they have been. We also have been, obviously, and I'm very proud to mention this because I'm bilingual. My second language is Spanish. There have been an increase in terms of the numbers of Spanish calls and emails to our team. We have different bilingual associates in our team, and we have received calls, especially, you know, emails from different countries, you know, especially in Latin America. So increase our approach to the Hispanic community, and I'm very proud to be part of that approach. So hopefully that answers the question. And we're a team of a couple of people.
A team of a couple people helped 86,000 people. And mm-hmm. How much did you charge them for the help that you provided?
No, we don't charge them. We do it out of love and care to help our people and our community, because there's another need out there. And our goal is to be, again, to be that person to provide that support. A lot of times it's not easy because we're not Superman or Wonder Woman. But our goal is to be able to do the best of our ability, despite the challenges and despite everything, to be able to provide that support to our families, autistic individuals, and our society in general.
Awesome. I don't know, you guys were only two. That's pretty impressive. And you just mentioned that you're bilingual. I'm bilingual too.
Yeah, nice.
So as someone who also speaks another language, can you tell us any struggle or differences growing up bilingual and autistic?
Well, because I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, which is, you know, most of people there speak Spanish. I was able to learn English very well early in my age, you know, around early through my childhood. My mom, the way, obviously the school helped me a little bit, but the way that really helped me was my mom put English television. She put Cartoon Network back then when it was, you know, at the top of the 90s. She put wrestling, she put Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars fan. That's one of my hobbies.
Hey, Eileen, have you seen Star Wars yet?
Don't worry.
Eileen has never seen Star Wars, ever. Working on it. You go to Netflix, Disney Plus, you hit watch Star Wars, and there we are. Yeah. Come on, Eileen.
I'm going to let you pass. Usually, I don't get.
I'm not going to let her pass. I'm going to keep bothering the crap out of her about this one. It's almost, yeah. Eileen, hold on. We're recording this in the beginning of May, so of course May 4th is coming up, Eileen.
May 4th. How about that? That would be so meaningful. I'll always remember when I watched it.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. My connection with Star Wars has been with me since age six. But going back to the question of English, that's where I learned, because and be able to watch English television in my household. And also my hobbies helped me also. Video games, wrestling, when it was good, a long, long, long time ago, in my opinion. And Star Wars for me, when it was good, when it was a long time ago. But I've been to Star Wars conventions. I've met different actors and actresses. I took pictures with Mark Hamill. I took pictures with Carrie Fisher a year before she passed away. For me, that was like, because for me, it's always been a challenge. I had hobbies. And for me, they were not only hobbies. For me, that was me going into my own world. And to be able to do this, you know, this trip to Star Wars, the conventions, and everything, for me, was a dream. And those are one of the best moments I had in my life. So I will never forget.
That's nice. You're really selling Star Wars. That's something.
Celine, you got to watch it 2 days.
You had to not only watch it, you had to live it.
Are there like six or seven movies now? Nine?
Hold on. Just like ABA, I will give you a prize and let's do one little step at a time. I will give you a $5 Starbucks gift card for watching the first Star Wars. But by first, I mean A New Hope. Episode 4. That's how Eileen works, right? Like bribing you to take small steps. That's how ABA works, right? Or this is how I imagine it works. Basically, I'm bribing Eileen to watch Star Wars. So,
yeah. Wait, you start at 4?
Well, no. Okay. We'll talk later. It's a little complicated, it starts at 4. Just go with it. Okay. we'll explain it to you later. And if anyone is just listening, even I can notice the confusion on Eileen's face. It's that dramatic. So
don't worry, I'm here to help as well. Let me know.
Oh my god. All right, Tony, tell us where we can find you on social media if you want people to follow you.
Sure, definitely. But before I go to that, I want to finish my story because I love to finish my story.
And you're autistic and you won't be able to continue if we don't let you finish the story. So
yeah. it's who I am. Yeah, it's what it is. So but yes, I was able to graduate. I went back to school in 2013. I left college in 2011. I went back to college in 2013 after my year of working in the customer service. I went back to school. I graduated in the area of business information management here in Florida. I was able to graduate with my bachelor's degree in business information management in 2016. And for me, this was a very important moment of my life because not only I graduated with my magna cum laude honors, 3.76 GPA at that night. But also, I was recognized as an autistic college graduate by the college president at that time. And for me, that's very important because not because of my story or special anything like that, because it became the confirmation of what has been, and it is my job today, which is to be that ambassador, that advocate for an entire community and to demonstrate to our society that people on the spectrum can achieve a better life, regardless of the challenges and the struggle. So a lot of times we focus on that. Each person can achieve a better life. And that became my mission. Later on, I graduated from college. I was able to release my own book, both in English and Spanish, my bilingual book, because there's not a lot of books of autistics in Spanish at the moment. And then later became a motivational speaker. And going back to the television question that you asked me early on, this came about in 2019, because I was promoting my book in Puerto Rico and they invited me to talk about my book in the main channels, including Telemundo. And at that time, I didn't have many followers on social media. Barely anybody knew about me. There are people that knew about me, but not a lot. And within the first interview, I gained like 400 friend requests on Facebook. I never had even 5 friend requests at the same time. And I received 400 at the same time. It's amazing. And then I have interviews on and on. And then I was offered to be in the position of having my own TV segment at Univision, which I had for 2 years. And to work on television, I want to talk about this, going through my work experience, it's not easy. I had to adjust myself working within the time frame because working on television, it takes, it's fast paced. You only have a couple of minutes to do your TV show, your TV segment. And I had to learn about that. And again, I didn't let the limitations control what I can and cannot do. But I was able to learn working on television, the multitasking and unexpected. I was able to bring people that I interview within the autism community from around the world. I even brought Dr. Temple Grandin to my show and I interviewed her almost a year ago, being the first and the only autistic Hispanic TV journalist to interview her on television and to this date. And I interviewed so many others, and I started my podcast right now. So again, one message that I want to leave before we end is again, we had to help each a person on the spectrum achieve a better life, given the opportunity. Again, just because they have the challenges, that's not me that can do something. I've always believed that. And hopefully we can, people that are watching this podcast can take that away from our conversation, and we can create a better world for our people on the spectrum and their families.
That was perfect. Great way to wrap this up. Well, actually, one more thing. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. You tell me just the first thing that comes to your mind. You know, like quick fire questions.
Sure.
First question.
Oh, Eileen, I've never told you I have a sensory issue with snapping fingers.
No.
So that's something you don't tell people, because then they just bully you and then they just snap them all the time. So it's like one, like I usually just like cringe and let it go.
Did it twice in a row.
Thank you. You're such a great friend, Eileen. I really appreciate that. Is this what they teach you, like in ABA, to like, you know, just like put people in like surroundings that are painful and uncomfortable to them? Or do you just like being mean to me because I give you a hard time?
I actually had forgotten when I did it the second time.
I want to mention about the therapies also. One thing before we end. Sorry. Again. I don't make a specific recommendation of a therapy. I have people that I respect and I admire in ABA therapy. And again, there's a debate in regards to that. We understand. But I always say, look at working with an individual. ABA may work for that person or may not. We don't know. Again, the most important thing is to be resourceful. And I'm talking now to parents, you know, specifically, to be resourceful and be proactive and never give up and not let the negative voices take you away from that mission.
Thank you.
And we almost made it one full episode without talking about ABA.
The fire questions.
Quick fire questions. First question, what is your favorite food or drink?
Oh my God, that's difficult. I go Hispanic, Puerto Rican food.
If you could be any animal, fictional or real, what would you choose and why?
Any character?
Animal, like a dog, cat, lion.
A dog. I love that.
What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Oh my God, really? I change that answer every year, so not always. I still have to go with 3, because that's the best movies. I don't care what other people say. That was for me the best Star Wars movie. Palpatine was awesome in that movie. So, you know, you need to watch it.
I'm sure you're right. Do you have any favorite quote or saying? If so, what it is and who said it?
The quotes, sometimes I'm not good with remembering quotes. Never give up, you know, I guess never give up, never surrender. That's from this fictional, who was it? I forgot the name. But never give up, never surrender. That's it.
That's good. What is your favorite autism symbol? Is it the puzzle piece, infinity loop, something else?
Oh, wow, the symbol. You know what? I don't go by no symbol. Whether it's puzzle or rainbows, for me, I always find.
Awesome. Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today. It was great speaking with you.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to follow my social media, yes. And also my podcast is My Time with Tony Hernandez Pumarejo, bilingual podcast in English and Spanish. If you want to learn more about my work, go to my website, tonyhernandezpumarejo.com. And also you can follow me on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube, and other places. I'm here available, here to help and make the difference. And I really appreciate all of you for giving me the opportunity to be here.
What's your handle on social media?
It's at Tony _Hernandez_Pumarejo at Instagram. Or if they can find me under Tony Hernandez Pumarejo on the Instagram search, they'll find me.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.